This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Robert Raines, the executive director and owner of the Gangster Museum of America. I came here about 12 years ago to help a friend move. We both were from my hometown, Pine Bluff, about 80 miles southeast of here, and I fell in love with the street. We were sitting on a park bench. It was about dusk, and these globular lights, if you've been here in the evening, the lights come on, and it's still kind of dusk, and it's just beautiful out in October, which it is today. We were drinking a glass of wine because we've been carrying furniture upstairs all day, sitting on a bench, and here comes a policeman, taps on the back with his nightstick, and I went, oh, boy, this is not going to be good. And he just walked along and said, how's it going, fellas? Everything okay? And he moved on, and I decided right then I want to do something here. Because it was just a super friendly, cosmopolitan place.
So somehow you became enamored with the gangsters.
I did. I had two questions for our director of tourism here. He said that the two questions that most convention goers ask when they come here, and normally, on COVID times, we have a convention every weekend here, 12 months every weekend here. He said, people want to know if you can still take a thermal bath in the bathhouses, and they want to know about Al Capone. So I took Capone and started researching it, found out the history of Hot Springs itself was really more fascinating than the fact that Capone came, because the makeup of Hot Springs, the multicultural Eastern influence of New York all the way down to Miami that was brought here, formed this little bitty mob-like place that was run pretty fair, but by the 1960s, according to the FBI, we're doing $100 million a year in gambling, but it was illegal in the state.
Wow.
So the money trickled straight up to the top and then was dispersed throughout, and it existed like that for 50 years.
So in the 20s is when the gangsters first found.
Capone and Torrio and Johnny Torrio's wife, when Capone was just their protege, they came in 1926, I think the newspaper here, the Sentinel Record, first reported them being here. And they were actually looking for a place to live. And Capone was here with them, and he was just a really young man at that point in time. Well, up until 1931, he kept coming back every year, even when he took over the outfit and Torrio retired. Capone would come down here and rent the fourth floor of the Arlington and bring the armored Cadillac and just spend a couple of weeks here. Most people did back then because you'd come by trains. He'd bring his car down here on a train. So
I seem to recall 4 or 5 years ago you telling me that like enemy gangsters would come and vacation.
Oh, sure. Moran was here a lot at the same time Capone was, and that's probably the two biggest arch rivals, at least for sure, in Chicago.
But they had, like, immunity.
It has always been a really, really strange thing here. In previous history, there's not been a lot of fights here. The cop and the sheriff's department got in a fight on Central Avenue back in the late 1800s, and a couple of them killed each other. But as far as rival mobsters,
but they never shot each other here.
Everything was peaceful here.
Like a truce.
Older Indians, the Caddos, some of the Caddo old chiefs that I've talked to have actually said the Indian tribes that would war could come here and get in the hot water pools before all of this was here. And they just lay down their bows and arrows and kind of sacred ground, and it somehow it seems like it's stayed that way.
Interesting. The Ohio Club, for example, there were different clubs here that were gangs.
Almost every state had a club here. We had the Alabama Club, the Kentucky Club, the Indiana, the Illinois Hotel where Rolando's is. We had the Kentucky Club. We had the Vegas Room. This is before Las Vegas was a gambling entity. Of course, we had the Arkansas Club, the Ohio Club. All of them seemed to have a state name in their title, and naturally people from that state would come. They'd first go there and then they'd drop into these other places.
But these were all illegal gaming and mob
prostitution,
and mob owned and run.
You know, the real criteria for being here probably was the excuse of the bathhouses, because they thought it would heal anything. And there was an old saying here that Hot Springs had something for the man who had everything. And they meant everything. until the invention of penicillin, they were given 1 million baths a year here because it was just a remedy for everything.
Supposedly, you would cure syphilis. So
yes, right.
They dip you in the mercury bath.
You know, some of the fountains, for instance, will give you readouts on the chemicals that are here, and we have cancer doctors that actually come here and fill up abundant jugs of water. They think probably it helps some form of cancer. I don't know why they'd go through the trouble of driving over here just to get water.
Your water company here is legendary, isn't
it? Yeah, it really is. Mountain Valley has been around since the 1800s, and I mean, even Man of War and Secretariat drink. I call them the overachievers. Even they drank Mountain Valley water and bathed in it, too. So
that's funny.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah. Why did the gang mob-driven world end here in the 60s?
Well, a couple of different theories on that. In 1966 or 67, whichever was the election year, I think it was 66, Nelson, or it could have been 68, Nelson Rockefeller was running for president. And he had the backing of the mob in Las Vegas, which was kind of a different takeover than what we had here. The mob really never took over anything here. They were the old-timers, ladies, and gambling, and having fun. And, and certainly here, when they came here, I tease people about it, but it was, they were really just on vacation. They could do a little business. Meyer Lansky's grandson is on a couple of our videos talking about his father could come here and they could talk to Owen Madden, our resident gangster from New York, owned the Cotton Club. They could talk to him without fear of being tapped because they could just get together in a at the Arlington and have spaghetti. And Mickey Cohen wrote about having spaghetti with Oney and the boys at the Arlington in his book. So it was just an easy place to communicate and at the same time have fun, fish, hunt, ride horses. There was just a lot of things to do back in that day and time other than gambling and other pleasures that they would enjoy.
And then, stretching my memory bank, I seem to recall you years ago telling me that the song I Left My Heart in San Francisco
first, Tony Bennett tells that story.
First and made its debut here, in San Francisco.
It did. Tony Bennett played here in 1960, and while he was a place called the Black Orchid, he and Ralph Sharon, his keyboard player, went in there and opened up a piece of sheet music, and it was San Francisco. They had never performed it. And so he just tried it there with no one around but C.B. Hudson, the bartender in the Black Orchid. And he told this story when he opened our Summit Arena here about 16 years ago. The bartender told him that, you know what, I don't buy albums, but if you'd record that song, I would buy that. That's a beautiful song, and I love San Francisco. So they performed it here at the Vapors. The next gig was San Francisco, and they decided to put it in their repertoire. And, of course, it became, you know, really big history after that. But to finish up, Tom, Nelson Rockefeller, why it all ended here is at least gambling and the people coming down. In the 60s, the mob was kind of changing. They had taken over Vegas. They weren't the old-timers like they were, you know, in our heyday, our glory days of gambling here. But Nelson Rockefeller was running for president, and his little brother was the governor of Arkansas. So he campaigned on shutting down the gambling, which was illegal anyway, in Hot Springs. And about a year after he won, they passed the gambling amendment here in 1967. In October, he vetoed it at the last minute, and that was the end of gambling till last November when it was voted back in.
So now you have a new incarnation of a giant casino right here in town.
We do. It's a beautiful place, and you know, I'm not much into gambling or that form of gambling. I guess anybody in small business is gambling these days, but it accompanies the racetrack, and you know, the racetrack is just booming. Not as far as participation from the spectators during this COVID time, but they're adding $4 or $5 million stakes races this year.
That racetrack is one of the highest stake races in America. Ongoing,
it is.
Right?
And we had American Pharoah here. I mean, the winners of the Triple Crown keep coming here and warming up and kind of running their I wouldn't call it a test run, but, you know, a lot of Arkansas Derby winners have gone to the Kentucky Derby.
And maybe pick up $1 million.
Yeah, while they're waiting on the Kentucky Derby. You know, and we also have, I guess it's a little over 200 room, couple of $100 million hotel that's going to be ready in January to accompany the 30,000-40,000 square foot casino that's already open. And it's really beautiful. It's well run. Oaklawn knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're kind of the best in the business. The Sella family is. I haven't heard a bad story from out there.
Before we go, a little bit about another, I think, to a point, a best kept secret of Hot Springs, Arkansas, in history, is your winter baseball training camps.
Man.
That predates Phoenix and Florida.
Yeah. Spring training for Major League Baseball started in Hot Springs.
At what period of time?
The late 1800s. Kennesaw Mountain, I can't remember his last name, the first commissioner of baseball came here. A lot of owners came here first and saw, well, look, this is a pretty cool place. I think we can start practicing down here. We had the facilities, just rough practice fields, you know. Then the Braves, Boston Braves, and Babe Ruth, and Ty Cobb, and Hornsby, and then we opened up a school here.
Somebody told me that it was the Hot Springs that was the real deal maker.
Well, it was. You know, the fact that they could have a lot of fun at night, because none of the fields were lighted, they'd have a lot of fun at night and could boil it out the next day, according to historian Don Durham. He's got a great book called Boiling It Out in the Springs. They could go over to the bathhouses or the Eastman Hotel, which was a giant one, or the Arlington or the Majestic. They could go over there and boil it out, go to the ball field, play hard, play tough, and then start their nightly routine back over again. And it just worked out great.
And there's another dynamic. You had black baseball players that played alongside the white players.
And we had the Negro League start coming in here after some of the white baseball teams. The Brooklyn moved to L.A., and they started going out to Catalina Island. Florida kind of started opening up. Arizona was starting to get a little more civilized. Yep. So, yeah, we've got a wall of 110 baseball players who are in the Hall of Fame who all spent a lot of time here in Hot Springs.
Interesting.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. So why did it go away? Why was Florida and Phoenix a big enough draw to take them away?
I think there was less for the players to do, and they could concentrate more on the team. This was almost like vacation.
Too much fun.
It was too much fun. Yeah. We have a couple of Cooperstown historians who come here every year for our baseball days, and they just talk about the fact that Leo DeRocher was fired three times for going out to the Belvedere Club and hanging out with the ladies in Hot Springs. And, you know, Ricky would fire him from the Yankees, and then by the time spring training was over, he'd have to hire him back. Just great baseball stories here, and I loved that time of year when our baseball weekend is here, because a lot of great players. Hrabowski came last year, and Lee Smith, and so actually it was this year, this March. So
cool.
Just a lot of fun, you know.
Thank you so much for sharing.
You're welcome. I mean, I could go on all day about Hot Springs.
Just
a magical place.
If I didn't have another appointment to go to, I'd keep you captive.
We can do it anytime you get ready.
Okay, so if somebody wanted to learn more about gangsters and baseball in Hot Springs,
well, you just go to tgmoa.com or go to our Facebook page, the Gangster Museum of America. I'm Robert Raines. I'm the executive director and the founder of the Gangster Museum in 2007, so we are in our 12th year now, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. We followed COVID guidelines, and it's actually working better for us. So we'll keep it like this even when the virus goes away. I'm Robert Raines, the executive director and owner of the Gangster Museum of America, Hot Springs, Arkansas. Smaller tour groups, but more tours per day.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks so much, Robert.
Sure, man.
What a pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Hot Springs, Arkansas. We'll see you here.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.
Come with me and we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits for naught.